Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. I suppose I should use that Meatloaf song, 2 out of 3 ain't, was it 2 out of 3 ain't bad?
Like that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm
Was
not
it?
going to sing it. Don't
No,
ask.
thank you. Because George, sadly, is not with us. Well, sorry, I don't mean it that way. He's not with us. I mean, he's not on the show today, and he's not on the show because he is currently performing in Waiting for Godot, which I had the pleasure of seeing on Friday night before the Saturday. And obviously, we're going to talk about the football. But just before we started the podcast, Andy and I were just talking about George and his role as a professional actor. I'm going to embarrass George because he will listen to this at some point. And I know we all love him for the character he is as an Evertonian. And obviously that's George being George. He's not playing a part in that. But boy, does he bring something to the stage when he gets on the stage. And I know there's quite a few people messaged me and I think messaged George as well, who listened to the podcast and happened to be in the audience on just by chance on Friday night. Wow. All I can say is wow. And if you get the chance to see him, because it's going to Bolton, isn't it? I think next Monday, and I'm not sure if it's going anywhere else after that.
No, it's not. It finishes in Bolton on May the 2nd.
Okay. If anybody listening to this wants to see George perform in his natural environment, I mean, this is close to his natural environment, but the stage is really his environment. It is worth every single penny and every single minute and whatever effort you have to make in order to go and see it. I was blown away by it, and so were the two friends of mine who I were with, Justin and David. We all loved it, and the whole audience loved it as well. And it was really the perfect precursor to what turned out to be a very, very special Saturday. At Bramley Moor, or Hill Dickinson Stadium, as we should call it these days. Incredible, beautiful day. Still a touch of cool air on the breeze coming off the Mersey, but a beautiful day. First sort of beautiful Saturday, I think, since the first game of the season. And obviously it being 5:30 kickoff gave most people, or those people that wanted to at least, the opportunity to have one or two beers beforehand. So there was an incredible atmosphere in the lead up to the game. And obviously I haven't been to many, well, this is the first home game of the season I've been to several away games. It was fantastic to see Evertonians getting ready for the game and actually really, really enjoying supporting the club. And this is before the game kicked off. And I think the whole atmosphere in the city was magnificent from Saturday lunchtime onwards. And again, it's the first time I've experienced seeing the city centre being, just ran full of Evertonians. And it really made me think about, I know we claim, or I claim, and both you and George support, and many others do, that we're the senior club in the city. It looked like it on Saturday afternoon.
It certainly felt like it from the atmosphere. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, before we get into the game, the atmosphere itself, I reckon, I was talking to somebody about this earlier. Yesterday. I think that's probably in the top four or five games for atmosphere that I've seen Everton play in over like 4 or 5 decades more.
Well, that's funny. It, well, If I could just jump in there, I was thinking about this earlier, about, in inverted commas, complete performance. And we've over in recent years, there's been the odd, and it has been odd, knocking of the door on the door of a complete performance. Things that come to mind, were the 4-0 tonking of City under Koeman, was pretty much a complete performance. And there's been one or two others. But I sat reflecting this morning while pedaling the bike in the gym. I found myself thinking that Saturday's 3-0 tonking of Chelsea, and no matter what anybody else might think, it was a tonking. And I found myself thinking, can I think of a better performance from that? An all-round team performance. And I found myself thinking, we've got to go all the way back to the mid-80s for a complete team performance of the nature of what we witnessed on Saturday. I mean, there were umpteen in the 80s, in that halcyon 3 or 4 years when we dominated. But I genuinely, honestly think that Saturday against Chelsea was the closest thing to a mid-80s domination that I've seen. Every single player put in a shift. The crowd were outstanding, and I have, I've been a critic of Moyes in the past, and I have to say he got everything spot on Saturday. And I might be wrong. I might be deluded, wearing blue tinted glasses, whatever cliche you want to say. But I honestly think that there's been a change in recent weeks in the way that David Moyes is going about things. We all know that he sets his stall out on rock solid defensive performances to protect and maintain what we start the game with, which is a point. And in years gone past under Moyes, there've been games when we have taken it to the opposition and blown teams away. What we've never done is, with no disrespect to him, is do it on an absolutely consistent basis. And this season, I think, he's obviously, he did a terrific job last year in pulling the club up from where it was when he took over from Sean Dyche. And, and he's built on that this season. But I've always kind of felt that he's like, he wants this season to really cement the foundations and then build from next season onwards. But I think I'm like I said, I might be wrong, tell me I'm deluded, whatever. But I just sense in the last, certainly the last 3 or 4 weeks, that Moyes has actually begun to think in more or less in the way that a lot of the fans have been thinking, and I have put myself in that bracket, is we've had 7 or 8 chances this season when we could have cemented a place in the top seven, top six, and really, really laid a marker out that we want Europe next year. And I just sense that Moisey has said, the fans want this. We've got a fairly decent squad now. Yes, maybe it needs a little bit of tweaking here and there, but this is a side and a squad that can compete. And I think he's taking the reins off them. That's what I think, because the way they played on Saturday, every single one of them was at it. And, you can look at the statistics and say, yeah, Chelsea had 64% possession and Everton only had 36%. It's not how much possession you have, it's what you do with it. and more importantly, what you do without it. And that was the most impressive thing for me on Saturday. Aside from the fact that we scored three good goals, well, should I say one good goal, one very good goal, and one absolutely outstanding goal. But it was what we did out of possession that really impressed me, because Chelsea had 64% possession, but never, ever looked comfortable on the ball. They maybe had a little spell late in the first half. Obviously, when JP made that another terrific save. But other than that, Everton got at them. We hounded them. And we pressed them. For me, that was as complete a performance as I've seen in the last 40 years. And I mean that quite honestly. And Moyes deserves every credit for what we witnessed on Saturday, which was an outstanding Everton performance, an outstanding Everton victory, and with three very, very good goals. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, and it's great. It's great to hear you say that, Andy. I think, and I agree with you on every single point. I'm just going to go back one little stage earlier, though. Given that
what's for the 60s?
No. Given that we're handing bouquets out and we're congratulating all and sundry, the job that the fans did and the jobs that the 1878
group absolutely.
It looked
absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
absolutely wonderful. You know, and it's probably too much to ask to say that's what we need every week. But yeah, that's what we need every week. We need that stadium to be the bear pit that it was. Every single Evertonian in there was on the right page and in the right frame of mind. And the team must feed off that. They have to feed off that sensing that this crowd wants something, and they want it bad. From the coach greeting outside to the noise inside when they take to the pitch, I don't think anyone, you can't tell me that the players don't feed off that passion that is pouring down from the terraces like a waterfall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
they'd have to be made of cement not to feed off that.
Yeah. Or was it the straw man who had no heart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally. I think it was Garnagay talking to Beto in the coach about about.
But the coach welcome and all the blue flares.
Yeah, because we don't often have cause to, but we don't often talk, you know, and praise the club. Moisey in the week told the club that what he wanted to do was he wanted the players in. Sorry, in the hotel, what's the hotel next to the ground? Sorry, my brain's gone mushy. What's it called, Andy? The Titanic, sorry.
Titanic.
yeah. Sorry, apologies for everybody. He wanted them in there the night before. So they stayed in the hotel the night before.
Yeah.
All together. And he built an atmosphere, and he wanted the club had asked for and agreed with the 1878s to put on that display. I was walking up to the ground with another friend, Lee, and we hadn't even crossed over the bridge when the players must have left the Titanic to go into the Hill Dickinson Stadium, and all you could see was blue smoke. It was incredible, and you could hear the noise. So what it was like for the players, and then again the club did something that they hadn't done previously when the coaches go around the back of the stadium to enter via the west side of the stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, those terraces that exist facing the river,
yeah,
don't know if you saw the pictures, but they were full of fans with all of the banners and everything else. And it just looked spectacular. And I in the past I've been sort of quite cynical of that type of thing, thinking, and I don't think I'm alone in thinking that this is perhaps not really an Everton thing to do, because maybe we shouldn't think this way. But it's more, certainly in older times, it was more associated with the types of things that the Kop might do for Liverpool FC. And I think there was a period certainly at Goodison where it almost be poo-pooed the idea of flags and banners. I know, like Wembley 66, there's still those great photographs of all those banners. And indeed, you are the author of one of the most famous ever, which will never be forgotten. But yeah, it was magnificent. And in the context of the day, the weather, the time of the kickoff, but also the opposition. And we're going to talk about the match, but let's also talk about the opposition for a minute. One of the things that really fueled the day was the decision by the Premier League in terms of the punishment that Chelsea received for the terrible things that they did. 40 odd million pounds worth of illegal payments. Yet they got a 10 million pound fine for that, and then a £750,000 fine for stuff that the academy had done.
I mean, it's just it's hard to put into words, isn't it? But the disparity between the punishment that Chelsea got for 74 offences compared to the punishment that Everton got for one offence is just mind-boggling. And how on earth the Premier League, or the executive of the Premier League, can justify that is beyond me. Absolutely. When I heard about it, and then obviously I realised, that it was that Chelsea was the next game. I actually put a message on Twitter. It's probably the biggest response I've ever had to a tweet about the irony of Chelsea's next match being at Goodison. Chelsea, 74 offences and a fine against Everton, one offence, 10-point deduction. And I have to thank everyone who liked it and reposted it and agreed with it. But it's just mind-boggling how they could come up with that, knowing what they'd done, not only, and to be fair, not only to us, but to Forest and Leicester as well. How do these people sleep at night? I just don't know. And I did actually put another tweet out saying, this isn't aimed at Rosinha and the current Chelsea players, because it's not their fault that what went on in the years gone by. And to my mind, I don't think the Chelsea players or the Chelsea bench, shall we say, with the manager and all the backroom staff and that, I don't think they got any undue abuse from the Everton crowd on Saturday, because in fairness, it's not their problem. The problems were all under Abramovich and what he did to buy success for Chelsea. And I think that's the thing that really sticks in the craw, is that at the end of the day, how many trophies and titles did they win through all that illegality? And that's what sticks in the throat, not just of Evertonians because of what we went through with the points deduction and whatnot, but every football fans of every other club should be. It just leaves a nasty taste in the mouth about what on earth are these people that are the executive of the Premier League thinking of when they make decisions that are quite frankly indefensible.
I mean, just as a point of accuracy, it was the Independent Commission that sent set the penalties, but you're absolutely
Well,
right. And if you,
whether it's the executive or an independent body, Paul,
yeah.
there's no justification for what we got for one offence compared to what they've had, or
No.
what Chelsea Football Club have had for 74 offences, for crying out loud's sake. It would have been bad enough. It'd have been five offences, but 74. And God only knows what's going to happen when they finally get off the backside and make a decision on the 115 charges against Man City.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
where's that going to end up, with a £12 million fine and a slap on the wrists?
I'll come on to that in a minute because
Oh, okay.
it's an interesting thing. But for those that don't know the details, the justification for the £10 million fine was that the new Chelsea owners discovered these irregular payments when they were doing the due diligence,
Right.
when they were purchasing the club, and they report, as the media reported it, they self-reported these irregularities, and they used that self-reporting as a means of mitigation. Mitigation meaning that you're effectively plea bargaining. You're saying this is what
Right.
we've done, and as a result of our actions, we should therefore have a smaller penalty. Nobody at all has, or virtually nobody at all, have reported on the fact that the new owners had a duty to report what they found. It wasn't some form of altruistic act, to bring forward something that they had no need to report. They had an absolute obligation to report, and had they not reported it, they would have been guilty of another set of bad behavior. Now, the fact is that they did report it, and that's fine. But I don't see how you can get credit for something that you're duty bound to do. You don't get credit for driving at 29 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone.
No.
And all the new owners of Chelsea did was report the details that they themselves found when they went through their due diligence process. And the second point was that the justification for the financial penalty was that Chelsea received no sporting advantage.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so umpteen trophies.
So when you look at it, when you start breaking it down, what were the things that they did wrong? Unregistered agent payments, £23 million, relating to the transfers of Eden Hazard, Ramirez, and David Luiz, and Andre Shuri, and Matic.
Right.
Are you saying that having them in the squad did not give you a sporting advantage? Question mark.
Yeah.
Hidden transfer fees, another £19 million. Samuel Eto'o, Willian, who I thought played, was one of Chelsea's best players over that period.
Yeah.
Nearly £2 million in undisclosed remuneration. And the list goes on. £3.8 million in hidden registration costs. That was the penalty that was applied to the academy. So the players involved in that, the names were redacted because obviously they were young kids.
Yeah.
But when you look at that, and you look at the quality of the players, and the contribution that those players made to Chelsea's success, so over the period, how on earth can you come to the conclusion that there is no sporting advantage? And then that, you said that in the context of what happened to Everton, and as you say, other clubs, Nottingham Forest in particular, Leicester as well, where they said, because you broke the financial rules and spent more money than you should do, you derived a sporting advantage. Therefore, the penalty has to be a sporting penalty. Yet, recruiting all of these players, and most of these players wouldn't have been recruited had it not been for the illegal payments, because these payments were a condition of those players moving from wherever they moved from to moving to Chelsea. Manchester United, I think it was Eden Hazard, had agreed terms with Eden Hazard's people. And then Eden Hazard's people mentioned the payment that Chelsea ultimately made, the illegal payment. Manchester United, to their credit, refused to make that payment. And that's why Eden Hazard went to Chelsea. So again, you've got to ask yourself, what on earth is going on? There was a sporting advantage. The other point that came out of the Everton case, of course, is that the commission plainly said, where you've got wealthy owners, the financial penalty is not sufficient. That it therefore meaning that it would have, if you've got wealthy owners, it has to be a sporting penalty. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Chelsea's owners are not short of a bob or two, or were not short of a bob or two at the time when all of these offences were committed. There's absolutely no logic. Now, the one benefit, if there is a benefit of it, well, actually, there's two benefits. One, it just added fuel to the fire for Saturday's game. But two, it really brings into mind what the independent football regulator brings to the party, because none of this could have happened, or none of this would happen in the future under the independent football regulator. That's a quite a bold statement to make, but it would be, in fact, I don't think anything could happen, but it would be extremely difficult. It would be extraordinary for it to happen under the independent football regulator. And if it did, one of the primary objectives of the independent football regulator is one of good governance. Governance being the way that a club is run and the systems within the club that make it run well. The independent football regulator has ultimately the powers to take the license. Every football club needs a license from 27-28 season. They can take that license away, and without that license, you can't operate. Now, it's unlikely that they would take the license away in the circumstances that we just described with regards to Chelsea, but they can charge them a fine of 10% of their earnings. So it's really fascinating, and I think for all of those people, and there's plenty of people in the game who are still not convinced that that the independent football regulator is a good thing, and they think that it will make it more difficult for the game to attract investment, something which I disagree with entirely, by the way. This is the reason why the independent football regu well, one of the reasons why the independent football regulator came in, because the game cannot be trusted to manage itself. Now, that might change in the future, and we might get better people, and we might get better investors, and we might get better executives who run clubs in a much more professional, honest, and decent way. And that's obviously one of the things that the independent football regulator hopes will happen.
That's what it was. It's certainly what all fans would surely want.
Well, and then this comes back then to the responsibility that the game has to the fans, because nobody within the Premier League, nobody within the independent commission, certainly nobody at Chelsea Football Club in the past, has given any consideration to the impact of their behaviours on millions and millions and millions of match day going fans up and down the country who spend their hard-earned cash watching football without the knowledge that what's gone on behind the scenes materially impacts the outcome of matches. and the competitiveness of individual clubs. And I think this has been underreported in the media. And I think it, and I'm sure of the case that the Independent Football Regulator will see this and will act on it from the point of view of saying, we will do our level best to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. And if it doesn't happen in the future, it means a more level playing field.
Exactly. I was just going to say it's the first stage of leveling the field.
Absolutely. Now, there's an awful lot of other stuff that needs to happen within the game to level the field, not much of which is to do with revenue distribution and making sure that the bigger clubs aren't so favoured as they currently are. And I think that might come over time. But this is as a first step to say, if your club is acting dishonestly, and it's acting dishonestly in order to gain a sporting advantage. So it's nothing about being able to perform better than any of your rivals. It's about doing something that they shouldn't do and gaining an advantage from it. Same way as in cheating in football on the pitch. It's the same thing. This stamps this out, and the game has to be a better game for it going forwards. Having said that, all of the revelations and the fact that it came out the week before Everton played Chelsea certainly added to it, must have added to David Moyes' pre-game talk to his players. And
You would have thought so, wouldn't you? You would have thought it added another dimension to the whole game. You would have thought that maybe the Premier League would have been a bit more, would have been a bit more savvy about announcing this before they met Everton.
Well, I think what we're proving here is maybe the Premier League aren't quite as clever as they
Well,
think.
exactly. Then
They think they are.
they're not as bright as they think they are.
Yeah. Anyway, it worked to our advantage. So back to the game itself. Some of the points that you made earlier. Our best performance in 30, 40 years. I'd have to think about that, but I think there can't be that many. If indeed there are any.
Well, yeah, like I said, we've had games where we've left the grounds thinking, my God, that was magnificent. I mean, like I said, the 4-0 tonking of City under Koeman, I mean, one memory, well, couple of memorable nights at Goodison was the game we played against Larissa, which included that stunning goal from Leon Osman. That was a great night.
Fine old game which went to penalties.
Even the Fiorentina game, when Arteta scored from 25 yards and the place went absolutely nuts.
Sorry, that was the game I meant. Sorry, again, brains.
The place went absolutely, that was a, I mean, ultimately, we went out on the night, but it was still an excellent performance from the team on the night, even though they didn't get the job done as we wanted. But like I said, I mean, there's probably been two or three every season where you've come out of the ground absolutely salivating.
But it was the quality. I think what differentiated, I mean, obviously a couple of the derby games where we won, a couple of the games against Manchester United where we won, you can talk about them in the context of being really enjoyable, memorable, and everybody having a
Yeah,
fantastic
but
time.
it's largely been on the back of victories. I honestly think this performance, I mean, obviously it was a victory. Let's not get stupid about this. It was a victory. But to me it was a statement.
I think the quality of the play that, and as you say, the style of the play. I can't recall an Everton side, and as I've shown twice already in this podcast, my memory is not what it used to be. I can't recall a game where we pressed like we pressed, and we pressed so intelligently, and where, Chelsea, I I happened to go to the Chelsea Newcastle game the week before. I know
Right.
Everton were playing Arsenal at the same time, and that's a long story why I ended up going to the Chelsea game. I didn't get lost or anything. I just ended up going to the Chelsea game for other reasons. Chelsea like to play the ball out from the back. They like to spend a lot of time on the ball. As you said earlier, they like to have lots of possession. And I thought Newcastle did a really good job on Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and obviously Newcastle won 1-0. And funnily enough, I said to somebody at the weekend, I know he's not liked by many Evertonians, but Anthony Gordon was fantastic in that game. Which won't win me very many fans neither, but he was genuinely good. But we took it to a different level. So I saw, I, you know, I, it, obviously it was at Stamford Bridge, and Newcastle played really well. And I was, even though I was with a bunch of Chelsea supporters, I was delighted that Newcastle won. We just took it to a different level. Really, there were times when there were four or five players pressing the same ball, and that did take me back to that mid 1980s side. One of the things that is often forgotten about with Howard Kendall, that we were a team that just pressed and harried the opposition all the time, never gave the opposition a moment's peace, and it got me thinking. Maybe this is one of the things that maybe David Moyes is. I think you're right. There has been a mind shift with David Moyes. Maybe he realizes this: the team he's got now, and he's got the way he's got them playing, the confidence that the away results are generated. Is this the best team that David Moyes has managed at Everton? Or is this the best first 11, let's say, that he's managed whilst he'd been Everton, either on the first occasion or now?
I think it's potentially the best squad he's managed at Everton, because when the team was announced, and you looked at the bench, and you think that's a really strong bench, Raul, Rubenham, Harrison, Harrison Armstrong,
Yeah, Brantway didn't start.
Brantway
He
didn't
came on.
start, exactly. And then and you've got two right fullbacks should we need them. That looks a really, really competent squad now, which with maybe one or two little tweaks could become a serial challenger squad. And when I say challenger, I'm talking about being right up there from the start of the season to the end of the season, and competitive in the cup competitions, and hopefully going all the way in one sooner rather than later. And I just think that it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's, Moyes has had an eye-opening dream or anything. It's something that's woke him up out of his sleep. But I think, I genuinely think that he now is thinking what some of the fan base have been thinking is, if we really put our minds to it, we can make Europe this year. And who knows? And to me, apart from the fact that the players played so disciplined, and went about their work thoroughly professionally, as you said, pressing every time Chelsea were in possession, they didn't get a moment's peace. But it's not only that, it's the fact that I think they're beginning to play with a little bit more freedom. I mean, we know that Ndiaye, I don't think he could stifle his ability or willingness to play with freedom. But I just think that there's a whole bunch of other players there who are suddenly growing in confidence in what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve. And as I said, they went about the game all on the same page. And I think they're now looking for the remainder of the season to, if they can replicate that, if they can put that application into the remaining seven games, who knows? Somebody put a tweet on Twitter this morning just saying, how many points do you think Everton can get from the 21 points remaining as they chase a place in Europe? And I thought, no, it's not a case of how many do you think we can get. The aim and the focus has to be entirely seven games, seven wins, 21 points, and let's see how things fall. Don't even be thinking about, well, we'll take a draw here, we'll take a draw there. What have we got to be afraid of? Nothing. We showed at the Emirates, and I think it was the Emirates maybe was the penny dropping moment, because until that final 2.5 minutes when Arsenal scored two goals, Everton were the better side in that game. We had better chances. We didn't have as much possession, blah blah blah, but it's what you do in possession. And there were Arsenal fans saying that we were the best opposition they faced at the Emirates all season, because we truly gave them a game, even though they'd lost to United a few weeks earlier. They actually said that over the 90 minutes, Everton were the best opposition they've faced this season. And I just think the last 3 or 4 weeks that a penny has dropped within the players, within the squad, within the training staff, and within the manager, that, okay, boys, let's let the reins off. We know we can defend. We know we can keep people at bay, daddy down. Now let's show what we can do. And it's the nature of those goals, I think, that on Saturday for me, that cemented that. How many people would have thought, that Beto would have scored such a sweet finish as that for his first? The second was another terrific break from the back by Garner Gay, and he fed Beto. Beto had one quick look and then thought, pick the bones out of this, pal. Put it straight at the goal. It was too powerful for him. A bit of a mistake by the goalie. Yeah, go on then. We'll give him a little bit of leeway on that. But Beto hit that ball so sweetly. So sweetly. And, well, what can you say about the third one? Big ball out of the back from JP. Beto wins the header, and Illiman and Dye does the business with an absolutely perfect finish. I mean, just the quality of all three goals. There was nothing sludgy about them whatsoever. Quality goals,
No,
quality finishes, from a team that was playing with confidence that, to me, was as high as it's been in a long, long, long time. And if they can keep that going for the remaining seven games, who's to say that they can't get 21 points and even force a win at the top four? Maybe
Andy,
I'm getting a bit carried away now, but you know what I'm saying.
I do.
What's to stop us?
None of
Who's going to
those.
stop us?
None of those three goals would have been out of place in any Champions League game.
Exactly. That's the thing. They were all good finishes, and nobody can take that three. Nobody can take any aspect of that 3-0 victory away from Everton Football Club. As you said, on the day, the stadium looked fantastic. The crowd were up for it. The noise was immense, and the team responded and got exactly what they deserved. Exactly what they deserved. JP gets his 100th clean sheet with another astonishing save. What's not to like and what's not to say? Come on, boys, just take it. Just one game at a time, but just go and do it all over again for the next seven games.
The Pickford save, I mean, obviously the Newcastle save is the, it's just incredible and will probably win, save of the season.
It should do.
Just an outstanding save. But this save was so special because the way he moved across the box in order to, like, hit the second, to get the second ball, there were people were like literally standing there hands on their heads, mouths wide open. Just they couldn't believe that he got to the ball.
I know.
And most of the Chelsea players were like that. And in fact, a couple of the Chelsea players actually applauded him.
Yeah, it's like his anticipation is almost telepathic, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the funniest thing for me is he makes that save and then immediately turns to the south stand and pulls faces and that, and the camera from it. There was a great camera angle that I saw on Saturday night of the crowd actually zooming in on the crowd behind the goal in like the first 5 or 6 rows, and they were all howling, laughing back at him because of his hysterics. He's just brilliant, Jordan Pickford. If ever there was a player that was destined to be a hero of Everton Football Club, it's him. It really is. He's up there with the very, very best. He really is.
Absolutely, and how wonderful it would be if we could win something with him in goal.
Oh.
Just to see what happens when we win something with him in
Oh
goal.
my God. I dread to think.
Could you imagine
Everton Newcastle Cup final.
and he saves, and he goes to penalties, and he saves a penalty at the end.
It would, you just can't imagine what he'd do. But he, I mean, but he's, I mean, you know, I mean, surely, you know, he's been with us a long time now, JP, and you know, he's probably going to see out his career with us. I hope he does.
Well, he signed
But
a new contract, so he's with us for at
yeah,
least another 5 years. So,
great. But there's another thing you've got to take into, you know, some of those other players in that squad must look at him and go, he is England's undisputed number one. He could have the pick of just about every club in the country and probably most of Europe. And yet he stayed at Everton. He's shown loyalty to Everton Football Club that's probably as above and beyond as any other long-standing Everton player. And that must rub off on the other players as well.
absolutely, because he could have been playing European football for the last 3 or 4 years, 4, 5, 6 years possibly.
Easily.
And you know, that says a lot, obviously says a lot about him, but it also says a lot about what maybe he thinks can happen next year. Because you know, he must want to, like they all do, he must want to walk out and hear the Champions League music. In an Everton shirt, and he could go and do it somewhere else, but he's, as you quite rightly say, he's chosen not to. But that's not a lack of ambition on his part. It is because he believes in what's happening at the club, and he's loyal, and you know, his qualities as an individual shine through week in, week out. And yeah, it's an absolute joy to have him. I think also, you know, obviously Jimmy Garner's got a lot of attention because of his England call-up,
Rightly so.
and that is like so deserved.
Couldn't agree more.
He has developed as a player, and I think you're right in terms of under Moyes' tutelage, you know, become a better player, and you know, the through ball for Beto's goal was just first goal was. If one of the top 4 or 5 clubs in the country and central midfielder had done that,
Yeah, exactly.
they would be talking about it for months. It was so precise. But then, in the same way as you said, you know, Garner Gay's intervention for the third goal was so perfectly timed and showed such great reading of the game. Obviously, massively experienced player. But it showed such great reading of the game. It
Well,
was.
if I could just jump in there, Paul, the one thing about that second goal was it started with Michael Keane taking on two or three Chelsea players
Yeah.
as he went forward. And then, you know, obviously when that broke down, you know, Chelsea couldn't control it, and Garner Gay took up, if you like, took up the challenge. Keane showed us the way to go. I'll have a lash at this. a quick 30, 40 yards. Lovely little ball for Beto. Beto has his quick look up and then thrashes it through the goalie's legs. Brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, all right, there's only three players involved in that, if you like, but there was something of a team ethic about that goal for me. You've got a defender striding forward, a midfielder striding forward, and a forward doing what he's there to do with aplomb. You know, I know it wasn't 11 players involved, but to me, that was a team goal.
Yep. No disputes there. I think also, just to mention a couple of other players, you know, we've talked about, and we still do need probably two new fullbacks. But Mikulenko didn't do anything wrong at all at the weekend.
Everyone knows I like Mikulenko. I think I do not think he's a bad player.
Yeah.
I really don't. He's you know, I know what people are going to say. You know, he's not as good going forward as Leighton Baines was and blah, blah, blah. But I still go back to what I've said umpteen times before. He was signed as a stay-at-home fullback. And be honest, how many right-wingers of the opposition have torn the back out of him?
Yeah, very, very few. Yeah.
Very, very few have torn the back out of him. And I think he's enjoying his time at Everton, probably for the best since he's been here. You know, he's playing in a side that's got confident, and it's rubbed up on him. He's playing more confidently.
Well, let's face it.
He's doing his utmost to get forward and be involved in the attack.
If he's fit, he's going to be on the team sheet. So why wouldn't he? And he's there on merit. It's not. I mean, one could argue we don't have a great deal of choice, but the fact is, he's there. He's there on merit. And I think the other player that needs a mention, notwithstanding the fact that it was a great team performance, is McNeil's turn his game round.
He's got another lease of life on him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's playing with confidence. That, you know, and it makes you wonder that those months when he was on the sidelines and in and out of the side and wasn't doing a great deal, that it's down to confidence. And I think, you know, I mean, you've said it umpteen times that David Moyes has matured as a manager. And I'm coming round to it now that I think he is a much more rounded manager than he was the first time when he was with us. You know, he's learned from his experiences of going to Old Trafford and failing, and Sunderland and Spain and West Ham with a modicum of success and everything. He's obviously comfortable being Everton manager again. You know, the players have grown under him. I mean, look at the resurgence in Michael Keane as well as Dwight McNeil. You know, last year, you know, the vast majority of or lots of the Everton fan base would have willingly driven Michael Keane to any other club in the country. And he's come back in the side this year because of the injury to Jared Branthwaite. You know, how many feet has he put wrong this season? You know, everyone says, oh, there's always a howler in him. Well, name me three. And I think people will struggle.
Yeah, Keane absolutely.
Keane has kept his head down, trained hard, got on with his job, and done what needs to be done in his primary role as a centre-half. And when he gets the opportunity to get forward, we all know he can head a ball, and we all know he can strike a ball as well. You know, it's a bonus, you know, when a centre-half gets as many goals as he does. Obviously, we'd like him to get a few more. You know, no one's going to count up to Degsy Mountfield anytime soon, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And if you had to rate Saturday's performance, every single one of them gets 9.9 out of 10. And the only reason I'm not giving it a 10 is nobody's perfect. But that was as damn near close to perfect for me. It was as I said at the front, that to me was the best all-round team Everton performance I've seen in donkey's years, and long, long, long may it continue. Because when they play like that, they've got absolutely nothing to be feared of in any other opposition. And they showed that at the Emirates.
Totally agree, man. Totally agree.
And they just need to just go on and beat the shite now.
Well, I don't watch Liverpool, as you know, and some people might argue I don't watch Everton that much, which is not the case. It's just I can't remember. Liverpool don't like it when teams do what we did to Chelsea.
No.
The weekend, and if we can rock up with the same performance against Chelsea, against Liverpool, I don't think we have a problem.
I'll certainly get behind that sentiment. I mean, the good thing, you know, that I know I keep saying this over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it gives you. There can't be an Evertonian now who's not looking forward to going to games. We haven't been able to say that for a long time, you know.
But that was the thing. There was such a lovely, relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah.
A lot of passion, obviously. Always passionate when Evertonians get together. But nobody was worried about the game. You know, everybody was of the opinion that, you know, we're playing well, Chelsea aren't that good, we're at home, it's a Saturday afternoon, weather's nice, going to be a great crowd, big atmosphere. Nobody can sit there. It reminded me a little bit like, obviously very different circumstances. It reminded me a little bit of the Bournemouth game when we stayed up.
Yeah, the Decore winner. Yeah.
Yeah, same sort of atmosphere pre-match.
Yeah.
Very different, but similar sort of day, a bit warmer for the Bournemouth game. Similar sort of day. Maybe it's just because I was meeting the same people as well. No, it was good. It was fantastic. And also hats off to the Everton media team who put that video out after the game. Which brought a tear to the eye, to be honest.
It did. It did. It was.
I was struck by your comment.
It was a great way to watch that.
I was struck by your comment, Andy, on our little WhatsApp group where you said that's what you really miss.
Yeah. It is. It is. It's, you know, it's... I don't know. Like I said, I know I've said this all season, since we've really begun to get our act together. I so desperately, desperately, desperately want Everton to be back in Europe.
Yeah.
And the sooner the better for me, because Europe won't know what's hitting if we qualify. There's going to be so many Blues want to go to any game in Europe. You know, it's going to be epic. I just cannot wait for Everton to get back in Europe. I really can't, because the fans will travel in such numbers and with such passion. They'll take that passion on a European road tour.
Yeah,
it'll be magnificent to watch. I really do. I think it'll be magnificent to watch. And this. That crowd on Saturday, you know, lifted the team and then carried the team. The team did everything that Moisey could possibly have asked of them, but they were carried along on the atmosphere and the passion of that crowd. And seriously, if he can get us into Europe this year, it'll be astonishing watching the Blues in Europe next year.
It will
And
be.
I've, it will, it really will be. You know, people have said in the past, you know, we've had TV series about Sunderland and Arsenal and Tottenham and this, that, and the other. They'll make it. They'll need to make a TV series of Everton in Europe, because the crowd scenes, you know, at the game and in the towns where we go will be momentous. Momentous. I cannot wait.
Hairs are standing up on the back of my neck.
I'm thinking back to that day in Lisbon when we played Benfica. All right, the game went the wrong way. Those thousands and thousands of blues in the big square in Lisbon.
In Lisbon, yeah.
Oh, it was incredible. And that's what I want to see again. I want to see town squares all over Europe packed with blues, enjoying themselves, not making trouble and not being a pain in the ass for the locals, you know, enjoying themselves, enjoying the sunshine if it's sunny, and dancing in the fountains if it's raining. I don't care what the weather's going to be like. I just know that there's going to be an army of blues there, and they are going to make the most of it. And I seriously, if there's one thing I want from football, it's to see Everton in Europe. Just for, not only, you know, obviously for the team's sake, but for the fans' sake, because these fans that have, you know, that have stuck by the club through the thinnest of thin, boy, do they deserve a few European days.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I'm going to call time.
Fair enough. I'm just going to go and get my atlas and roadmap out.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't need to do that, Andy. Just give me a credit card and I'll book you a charter flight on Esk.
You're on.
wouldn't that be nice? Right.
Oh,
Well, there we go. The sad thing is, this is no football for a couple of weeks now, is there?
No, it's International Week, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully Jimmy Garner gets his first cap.
Yes.
And you know, but the main thing is, please don't pick up an injury. Him, JP, and any of the other Blues that are on international duty. Go and enjoy your time with your country, but please don't pick up an injury.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Branthwaite not being in the squad is just a reflection of his current return from injury, rather than him not being in the World Cup squad when that's finally announced.
Yeah, I would guess so. I would guess so.
Yeah. Anyway, let's cross that bridge when we get to it. Been an absolute joy because, well, first of all, talking to you. Shame George wasn't here to enjoy it with us, but I know he is in spirit, and certainly by his comments to us both over WhatsApp over the last couple of days, he thoroughly enjoyed it. And great stuff. Really enjoyed our conversation, enjoyed the weekend. Fabulous to see some really great Blue mates. I'm going to give a shout out. I don't normally do this. I'm going to give a shout out to one guy. Martin, you know who you are. I'm not going to say what your Twitter handle is, but lovely to see you. I saw you before the Fulham game down in London, and managed to bump into you on Saturday as well. So yeah, great seeing you, mate. You know so much more about football. You should be sitting here where I am, and I should be doing something else. That would be a very different podcast if you were running it. But there we go. Maybe one day. Right. Andy, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. And yeah, we will speak. We'll probably speak at the weekend.
I'm sure we will. We'll
Okay, mate.
find some. We'll find something to yap about.
Well, maybe we can get your brother off the stage and get him in front of a microphone. Let's hope
All
so.
being well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, guys. Thank you, everybody. Well, thank you, Andy. Not thanks, guys, because there are only the two of us. I'm stopping now. Thanks. Bye.
Cheers.